Today I am in Greenville, where my brother-in-law, Charlie Kraft, is undergoing surgery to attempt to remove cancer from his body. We sometimes get caught up in the news of the day and fail to realize how fleeting life can be. Your prayers for Charlie Kraft are appreciated. I'll give you information on Kim Jong-un and the North Korean regime today that will help you to understand what's at stake in this latest standoff between the United States and North Korea. So stay tuned. But first, the liberal mainstream media has tried to make much of President Trump's firing of the FBI director, James Comey. But the FBI director, whether James Comey or another former director like William Sessions, serves at the pleasure of the president. The president of the United States can remove the FBI head for many reasons, or for no reason at all. In October and November of 2016, career Democrats in Washington were all over the media suggesting that James Comey should either be fired or resign as FBI director. They were angry that Comey had told the country that the investigation of Hillary Clinton destroying emails was being reopened. Whether or not Comey should have made that announcement can be argued, but the demand from Democratic circles for his dismissal or his resignation is not in dispute. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer and the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi were outraged at Comey and led the charge against him. Just a few days ago, Hillary Clinton blamed James Comey for her defeat at the polls, losing to Donald Trump. When President Trump decided to fire James Comey, those same hypocritical Democrats attacked him for doing what they themselves had called for. Why now, they ask, and the mainstream media echoed that call. It's important to remember that these same hypocritical career Democrats had demanded that Attorney General Jeff Sessions recuse himself from any action involving the unproven story about a collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign. Bowing to their wishes, Attorney General Sessions did recuse himself. Now, that left the investigation of the Russians in the hands of Acting Director Rob Rosenstein, a man who was himself awaiting Senate confirmation. While partisans in Congress debated Rosenstein's appointment, the Justice Department was in limbo. Finally, after having their few minutes of fame before the TV cameras, Republicans and Democrats overwhelmingly voted for Rosenstein's confirmation. That was in mid-April 2017. With Jeff Sessions on the sidelines, Rob Rosenstein was now charged with determining whether or not James Comey should continue as FBI head. Within about 3 weeks, Rosenstein reviewed the evidence and came to the conclusion that James Comey should be fired. He made that recommendation to his boss, the Attorney General, and to President Trump. It was then that the president removed the FBI director from his post. The president was well within his right to remove James Comey from his position for the reasons stated in Rosenstein's recommendation, or frankly, for no reason at all. Yet hypocritical career Democrats and a spiteful mainstream media went ballistic. They suggested that Comey's firing must have had something to do with the investigation of the Trump-Russia connection, a connection that has been debunked reportedly and repeatedly by federal officials. Many of us remember when President Bill Clinton fired FBI Director William Sessions on July 19, 1993, just one day before the body of White House Deputy Vince Foster was discovered in a Washington park with a bullet through his head. At that time, the career Democrats and their media cronies attacked Republicans for even asking about the mysterious death of Vince Foster and any possible relationship to the ongoing investigation of Bill and Hillary's checkered past. Foster was a boyhood friend of Bill Clinton's and had been a partner with Hillary in Arkansas's prominent Rose Law Firm. There were also unconfirmed reports that Foster and Hillary Clinton had a close relationship. When Foster's body was discovered in the park, it was declared a suicide by Clinton insiders, and no serious investigation of the death ever took place. Any suggestion that Foster's death might involve the Clintons was hurriedly dismissed. Yet Foster's office was quickly invaded by Clinton operatives, and his files went missing. The circumstances of Foster's death were very mysterious, and yet anyone who raised a question about it was promptly attacked by Clinton insiders and their willing media. Now, am I inferring that FBI Director William Sessions was fired by Bill Clinton one day before Vince Foster's dead body was found to stop Foster from disclosing damaging information on the Clintons? No, because there is no direct evidence to prove such a connection. But that has not stopped career Democrats like Pelosi and Schumer or the mainstream media from linking Comey's firing to a Russian connection that has no evidence at all. Fast forward 24 years, and we can clearly see the hypocrisy of career Democrats and the media as they circulate an unproven narrative about Trump's motives in firing James Comey. These hypocrites rush forward to try and tie Comey's dismissal to the investigation of Russian hacking and a link to the Trump Organization, a link that has thus far been dismissed for lack of any evidence. Let's understand something. The presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump was not the first American election that Russia had tried to hack. They do it as often as they can, and this surprise expressed by the media is pure baloney. What we need to be doing in this country is improving our cybersecurity to prevent Russia or anyone else from influencing our elections. There is absolutely no evidence to show that Russia or any other country made a difference in this past election. But there is plenty of evidence of meddling by Russia. In past elections and in the one just concluded, they will continue, and we have to be prepared to combat it. But this constant attack on a duly elected president is unprecedented and harmful to the country. The attacks are the far left's attempts to stop this president from reversing the damage to America done by liberal progressives and to undermine President Trump's tenure in the White House. They had America on the ropes, and the election of the devious Hillary Clinton would have provided the knockout punch. When the American people turned Clinton away, the liberal progressives were stunned, and they turned to anger. They will not rest until we are morally and financially bankrupt, our Christian beliefs are destroyed, and Hollywood values become our values. We cannot allow that to happen. The president can begin by stopping the daily press briefings where left-wing reporters are free to pursue their liberal agenda by challenging the president's press secretary with argumentative diatribes disguised as questions. Offer the briefings direct to the American people with no so-called reporters in the room. Why would someone be expected to put their foot into a cage of rabid animals and return there day after day? There is no fairness in the Washington Press Corps. They have a far-left agenda and deliver fake news to the American people. Let them submit written questions to Sean Spicer and receive written answers. That way, they cannot continue to use these press briefings as a soapbox for their leading questions and argumentative responses. For his part, the president should resist the temptation to remark on all of the silliness the press brings up. James Comey was fired. Let that be the end of it. Don't respond to the press, and don't make negative comments about the former FBI head unless Comey takes the initiative. There are so many problems confronting our country today, and yet the career Democratic politicians and a foaming-at-the-mouth mainstream media insist upon diverting attention away from those problems in favor of calls for Trump's private tax returns or creating a link that does not exist between Russia and the Trump campaign. Donald Trump, in my opinion, should insist upon an impartial investigator to take up the issue of any possible collaboration between his campaign and Russia. Call the Democrats' bluff. And when the investigation is complete and no evidence found of collaboration, make the career Democrats and their liberal press lackeys responsible for the cost of that investigation. They should also be called out for pushing a political agenda without a basis in fact regarding Russia and the election. Now, I've been in radio and television for 54 years, and I know bias when I see and hear it. When it is taken to an extreme by a majority of the so-called press, as is being done today, it is unhealthy for our country. Hillary Clinton did not lose the election because of the Russians, nor because of James Comey, and Democrats know it. She lost because her entire adult life has been corrupt and because she cannot resist telling lies. She also lost because she is a totally unlikable human being, and the Russians did not have a hand in that. I hope you'll listen carefully as I explain the Korean War and its aftermath that confronts us today. You'll hear facts about North Korea and its capabilities that you have not heard before. I can remember when North Korea invaded South Korea and kicked off a war that drew in the United States and lasted some 3 years. I was 8 years old in 1950 when the war began, and I can remember the family adults gathered around a table radio to listen to Gabriel Heater and others report from the front. Young American men, some boys really, were dying in a place far away and where most of them had never even heard about. We had no TV to show us the gruesome details, and so we were left with our vivid imaginations and the picture painted with words from war correspondents. The nation was on pins and needles, fearing that a world war might develop that threatened our homeland. I do not remember any journalist undermining the president at that time or considering themselves to be neutral. They were patriotic Americans, simply trying to report the facts. Contrast that to today, when media bias is everywhere, when so-called journalists have proclaimed themselves neutral, when America is in conflict, even with murderous, illegal gangs. Every move by President Trump is criticized, and fake news spread. All of us have heard our president undermined on the network nightly news, but we have not heard the media demean Kim Jong-un as they do their own president. This is a naive, brash, and impetuous dictator who keeps inching the world toward war. While the media and Clinton Democrats constantly reported on their biased views that Donald Trump was not qualified to be president, that he would plunge us into war, that he was incompetent, we did not hear the media describe the North Korean dictator with those words. Kim Jong-un was just 28 years old when his father died and left him to lead the country. Prior to that, he had no accomplishments, no military background. In short, he was definitely unqualified to lead his nation or take control of the world's fourth largest military. Yet the liberal mainstream media and career Democrats refused to rally behind our American president and instead remain virtually silent about the deranged dictator, his threats to America, and the fact that North Koreans are starving to death while Kim Jong-un feeds his military machine. Listen now while I tell you what the mainstream media conveniently leaves out of their fake newscasts. Most Americans, including those of us old enough to remember the Korean War, don't fully understand the conflict or its aftermath that we are experiencing today. In order to cut through the information gap, I'll try to explain why North Korea is the greatest danger facing America today. My research took me through Wikipedia, U.S. News, Vox.com, and other sources. Before we look at the history of Korea, let me tell you of some of the odd and baffling things you don't know about the secretive North Korean regime. First of all, marijuana is legal in North Korea. But citizens are not free to choose their own hairstyles. There are 28 state-approved hairstyles to choose from. Scissor-wielding authorities crack down on anybody sporting a capitalist hairstyle, and offenders may be shorn on the spot. They have their own calendar. It is not 2017 in North Korea. It is 106. North Korea keeps its people in line with a three-generation of punishment rule. Anyone who breaks the law is not just punished. Their entire family is punished, too. Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Il-sung, wanted to showcase North Korean power by building a record-breaking skyscraper. The pyramidal Ryugyong Hotel in Pyongyang is 1,000 feet tall and 105 stories and cost hundreds of millions of dollars to build over decades of starts and stops since its 1987 construction began. Sadly, this iconic building dominating Pyongyang's skyline remains empty and unfinished. Pornography is prohibited in North Korea, except for the library of porn owned by the dictator Kim Jong-un. Anyone else caught with any type of X-rated material is sent to a correctional prison camp. Some have been shot for such an offense. North Koreans have no access to the Internet or foreign media in an attempt to keep the people in the dark about their country. They are told that they have it so much better than South Koreans, and they don't know the difference. Not far from the DMZ, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, sits creepy Kijong-dong. At first glance, it looks like a pleasant town, full of colorful houses and schools, a hospital, and a freakishly large flagpole, built to be taller than the one in South Korea's city of Seoul. However, it has been nicknamed Propaganda Village and is thought to have been constructed in the 1950s to lure South Korean defectors north of the border. Nobody actually lives there. Lights are set to a timer, and the buildings are mere shells and facades. A loudspeaker used to broadcast messages praising the virtues of North Korea and anti-Western rhetoric, but that nonsense stopped in 2004. Kim Jong-un was only 28 years old when he became North Korea's supreme leader, after his father, Kim Jong-il, died in 2011. He's 33 today. He has no military training, but is at the command of the fourth largest military in the world. Every 5 years, North Koreans are compelled to vote in an election, but there is only one name on the ballot. North Korean citizens born after the war are shorter than their South Korean counterparts by about 2 inches due to the poverty rate. It is said that 6 million citizens don't get sufficient food, and a third of the children in North Korea have chronic malnutrition. As his people starve, Kim Jong-un is said to have a net worth of more than $5 billion. The division of Korea between North and South was the result of the Allied victory in World War II and in 1945, ending the empire of Japan's 35-year rule over Korea. The United States and the Soviet Union occupied the country with the boundary between their zones of control along the 38th parallel. The Korean War from 1950 to 1953 left the two Koreas separated by the Korean Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ, in the latter part of the Cold War and beyond. Since the war, Korea has remained divided along the DMZ north and south and has remained in a state of conflict, with the opposing regimes both claiming to be the legitimate government of the whole country. Sporadic negotiations have failed. They do not produce lasting results between any reunification. Today, his tough talks and threats from North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un has echoed his bluster since taking office, but he resides over one of the weakest, most dilapidated economies in the world. In fact, North Korea's military showmanship and threats of nuclear war usually come when the nation is desperate for food, aid, and other forms of economic assistance. Again and again, the West has accepted promises from North Korea in return for assistance, and each time they break those promises and resort back to threats. North Korea is believed to have perhaps 6 to 10 nuclear weapons, and the Pentagon has concluded that the bellicose nation may have the ability to deliver those weapons atop long-range ballistic missiles. They continue to test stronger missiles, and Barack Obama gave them 8 years to develop missiles without action by the United States, just as he gave Iran time and money to build up their arsenal. As an economic power, however, North Korea is a laughingstock that can barely feed its own people, which is why some analysts think the country may collapse at some point or undergo rebellion by insiders fed up with disastrous economic policies and relentless repression. Still, the simple fact that North Korea continues to develop and test missiles, let alone nuclear weapons, means it will be the thorniest and most complex issue confronting President Trump during his time in office. It is also the most dangerous. A misstep could lead to open conflict with a nuclear-armed dictatorship run by one of the most unpredictable leaders on Earth. First and foremost, critically, North Korea has nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles that, when reliably combined, could strike U.S. allies in the region, like South Korea and Japan, where tens of thousands of U.S. troops are stationed. Thankfully, it still has some work to do before those nuclear-tipped missiles could reach American territory. Obama gave them time to develop and test, but the Trump administration cannot and will not allow them to continue developing and testing, all the while threatening a preemptive nuclear strike against the United States. Second, North Korea has a vast array of artillery, that is, large guns usually used in land warfare, that could be used to attack South Korea. It also has a substantial chemical weapons stockpile, as well as elite special operations forces that could prove challenging for South Korea's own forces to handle. If North Korea feels like its sovereignty or an important national interest is threatened, it will seriously consider using a nuclear weapon to respond. To do that successfully, North Korea needs two things: a functioning nuclear weapon and a way to deliver that weapon to a specific location. North Korea has both, but caveats apply. There is currently no evidence that North Korea can place a nuclear warhead on an intercontinental ballistic missile and reliably hit any part of the U.S. mainland or its territories. That said, North Korea has the potential to put a nuke on a medium-range missile that could reach South Korea and Japan, two allies that host our military installations. Any nuclear strike on those countries would put American troops stationed there directly in harm's way. Moreover, it is thought that North Korea will have intermediate to long-range missiles capable of carrying a nuke to American soil ready by 2018. That would put Guam and potentially Hawaii and other parts of the United States within North Korea's nuclear reach. Think about that. Experts believe that by next year, North Korea will be able to hit U.S. territory with a nuclear weapon. And they think it can probably already hit Japan, South Korea, and U.S. troops stationed there with a nuke right now. That is the core of what is meant by talk about the North Korean threat. It's why this crisis is so immediate. It is also because North Korea has dramatically ramped up the pace of its missile testing in recent years. In 2017 alone, the country conducted 3 successful missile tests and suffered 2 setbacks. That's on top of the 5 nuclear tests it conducted since October 2006. Kim continues to be the most bombastic and overly confident world leader. It's unclear if Pyongyang has what is known as a second strike capability. That is, if North Korea were struck by a nuke could it still retaliate with a powerful nuclear strike of its own? The jury is still out, but it is definitely trying to secure that capability. If it has that ability, the stakes for any country thinking about attacking the North becomes exponentially higher, because they would then be susceptible to being hit by a North Korean nuke in response. In other words, it makes North Korea more dangerous and therefore gives them more leverage. Finally, Kim claims that he has a hydrogen bomb, a far more powerful type of nuclear weapon than the run-of-the-mill atomic bomb we know he already has. His assertion has not been proven. He more than likely has a boosted atom bomb, which uses a radioactive form of hydrogen that makes it more powerful than a normal atomic bomb, but not nearly as powerful as a true hydrogen bomb. While Kim's nuclear and missile programs get all the attention, a seriously unappreciated threat comes from North Korea's conventional weapons, including the world's largest artillery force. A third danger comes from the country's elite special operations forces that could magnify the impact of a North Korean strike on South Korea. South Korea's capital city, Seoul, is a so-called mega city with a whopping 25.6 million residents living in the greater metropolitan area. To put that into perspective, there are 8.5 million residents in New York City and 18.7 million living in Los Angeles. Seoul, South Korea, has almost as many residents as New York and Los Angeles combined. It also happens to be within direct firing range of thousands of pieces of North Korean artillery already lined up along the border and known as the demilitarized zone. Around 70% of North Korea's ground forces are within 90 miles of the DMZ, presumably ready to move south at a moment's notice. The Korean War that began in 1950 was begun after the North attacked the South. For its part, South Korea has never attacked the North. Simulations of a large-scale artillery fight between the North and South produce some pretty bleak results. One war game convened by The Atlantic back in 2005 predicted that a North Korean attack would kill 100,000 people in Seoul in the first few days alone. Others put the estimate much higher. A war game mentioned by The National Interest predicted Seoul could be hit by over 1 million shells in under an hour. Those results do not bode well for one of America's closest allies or for the tens of millions of people in Seoul. Just a single volley of North Korean artillery could deliver over 350 metric tons of explosives into Seoul, roughly the same amount of ordnance dropped by 11 B-52 bombers. North Korea also has a robust chemical weapons program. South Korea's Ministry of Defense estimates that its northern neighbor has between 2,500 and 5,000 metric tons of chemical weapons, including sarin and the VX nerve agents. Sarin is thought to be the chemical agent used in the Assad regime's recent attack in Syria, which killed 72 people and left children gasping for air as they choked on the poisonous gas. Should North Korea attack, it might use chemical weapons early on in South Korea's urban areas to increase the death toll. At the same time, conventional weapons could rain down on the South. After that barrage, North Korea's 200,000-strong special operations forces should have an easier time entering the South through already existing tunnels, many submarines, or Russian biplanes. Pyongyang would also have to find a way to employ its growing cyber capabilities. Granted, North Korea cannot win a full-blown war with South Korea, should that come to pass. For one, America has the ability to stop a North Korean missile launch before it even happens with a cyber capability. But even if a launch did take place, the THAAD system being employed in South Korea should take it down. If that missed, our ships in the Pacific could shoot down the missile, and if that failed, Patriot batteries could also bring down the missile. North Korea has more troops than South Korea. The North has 1.19 million active troops, with 7.7 million reserves, the largest force in the world, while South Korea has 655,000 active troops in the South. But should a conventional fight break out, U.S. and South Korean air power would help balance the scales either way. North Korea could cause a lot of damage and harm to a lot of countries and people as itself goes down. The economic consequences of Japan or South Korea, respectively the 3rd and 11th biggest world economies, reeling from a big attack, would impact the world's financial future. Additionally, millions of hungry, displaced people would be trapped on a small peninsula during a brutal war. Meanwhile, tensions would rise as great powers like China, Russia, and the United States would likely be drawn into war. That's already happening, in a way, as Russian and Chinese ships sail America's carrier group in the region. They both call for restraint in these tense times between America and North Korea. Although the prospects of an all-out war with North Korea are still pretty slim, the depressing vision of the immediate after-effects of a military exchange is the kind of scenario the Trump administration has to plan for. The great danger is that Kim Jong-un will underestimate Trump's resolve and do something stupid that cannot be ignored. Trump seems to have gained a healthy appreciation of the seriousness and complexity of the North Korean challenge, calling it the greatest immediate threat to the United States. Initially, President Trump thought that China could use its economic and diplomatic influence over North Korea to quickly quell the threat. But after meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Florida last month, Trump's perspective changed. Trump said that after listening to the Chinese president for 10 minutes, he realized it's not that easy. The good news is that Trump now has a more realistic sense of the enormity of the North Korean threat, and he has taken down steps to work with China to solve the problem, something the administration of Barack Obama did not do. The mainstream media and clueless career Democrats attacked Trump after his meeting with the Chinese president because Trump did not stick his finger in the president's face and accuse China of currency manipulation. But think about how asinine that charge is. The United States and the world need China's help to avert a nuclear war brought on by a demented dictator in North Korea. North Korea depends on Chinese aid for almost 90% of its economy. China does have leverage there, but why would they use that leverage to help the United States if the President of the United States acts belligerently in a face-to-face meeting with the Chinese president? We live in an increasingly complex world where countries need to cooperate with one another. And that means that there will be give and take, compromise, deal-making, and thank God we have a president who knows how to negotiate. The Democratic Party is hell-bent on destroying the presidency of Donald Trump, even though that means that Americans will suffer. They are bitter because Hillary Clinton lost the election that prevented our country from having the Supreme Court stacked with highly partisan justices who seek to legislate from the bench rather than enforce the Constitution. The election stopped Clinton's vow to carry on Obama's policies and to take our country further to the left with the likes of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Leftist Democrats had the deck stacked. They relished a Clinton victory and ignored her unethical history. If this terribly flawed candidate could only win and continue to bring America down as Obama had done, the left would be happy. But when the American people elected Donald Trump, the left resorted to their violent past and intolerance. Think about this. Donald Trump made promises on the campaign that the American people liked, and they elected him to carry out those promises. From day one, President Trump has been fulfilling the promises he made. Much was made of his first 100 days in office, and how he had not gotten everything that he had promised done in that 100 days. But the media ignores the fact that a bitter Democratic Party started piling on Trump's back from the first day in office, fighting against his efforts to carry out the will of the people. And in spite of that obstructionism, this president got more done in his first 100 days than any president since Harry Truman. While Trump tries to concentrate on the dangers before us, including the clear and present danger of North Korea, career Democrats continue their petty calls to see his personal tax returns, or for him to throw common sense to the winds and attack countries whose help we need to divert a war. By opposing every single thing this president proposes, career Democrats are attacking the will of the American people. In our world today, we need a president who knows how to compromise and make deals with our enemies rather than ignore the building danger, as Barack Obama did for 8 years, and hide under the desk. We may not like them, and they may not like us, but finding a common interest with these other countries is in the best interest of us all. As for North Korea, Kim Jong-un's threats are like a blue jay taunting a pit bull. The blue jay may get in a peck or two, but in the end, there will be feet, feathers, and a beak adorning the porch. Carl?